Hey, everybody, this is Bart Baggett. How are you tonight?
Good. Bart.
Great.
Good.
Good. Well, thanks for being on the phone call. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we had hundreds of people, so we didn't get an interaction. So thank you for being on the call. And I think a lot of people will be joining us. Did everyone get the page for the handouts if you want to download and follow along?
Mm-hmm. You now.
Good, good. I'm not sure why that wasn't included in the links, but next time it's always on the membership page, and it has instant teleseminar usually is the place for that link.
You can go to www.instantteleseminar.com, and then you're going to type in a number in the box that it says, and the class handouts are on this page, so everyone can get them, even if you just can view them on your computer. That's good, too.
So it's instantteleseminar.
Seminar.com.
.com.
Okay, and the number to enter is 593-3181.
And it's quite a long handout. Some of you would recognize some of these images from the home study course, and some of those it'll be brand new to you. But I think we'll probably be about 10 minutes before we get to the first major graphic. So if you want to print those out or pull those up, you can. So Melody, Brian, Jerry, who else is with us?
Hi, Bart.
Dr. Mary, it sounds like. Okay, good. Well, let me show you what we're going to do tonight. Tonight is a certification level class. It is also specifically on the topic of love, sex, and relationships. Everybody loves to talk about that. And I think even if you've heard some of the home study courses, tonight's class may be a little different in application, and maybe even hopefully you'll learn something brand new. So those of you that are brand new on the phone call, kind of what level are you? Melody, are you kind of a freshman? Are you graduated? What's your skill level with graphology?
I got the 101 course.
Good.
And I actually bought a 12-pack of the cards and gave them out as Christmas gifts.
Nice. You were the head of the party, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I've used it at a couple of parties and analyzed all my friends. And I was hit at the park total. Every single person was a stranger, including the person who invited me.
Uh-huh.
And they said that they were talking about it for weeks, and I hit everyone right on the nail.
Nice. And that's amazing just from the cards. Very, very good.
Well, I had the 101 course also, which does kind of go into a little bit more. Plus, I've read, you know, most of your emails.
Good.
And now I have the I got the graphic therapy, and I also got the book about A Question of Honesty, I believe it is, by...
Oh, Dishonesty, right, yeah. With Christina.
Right.
Well, good. Well, you know, what's interesting is most people get the graphical deck cards, they get the 101, they get the very basic kit, and you're very accurate. And, in fact, you're probably surprisingly accurate for such a small investment in time. And I guess some of the criticism that I've had over the years is they, meaning people that also write books on handwriting, they don't think I know how to do advanced handwriting because so many people in the world have got the graphical deck cards. And so they say that's the only thing that you know. And I think the real joy of being able to do a class like this is be able to actually use advanced stuff, combine things like NLP or hypnosis or psychology or cognitive psychology or even parenting skills, and talk about how all these things integrate together. Because all of my students, especially the ones that are certified or the ones that are teaching around the world, they're very skilled, and we know so much more than the basic 50 traits. But, of course, you know, from an individual that just gets the cards, it seems so accurate, and it is, but there's so many exceptions to the rule. And so at some point you'll hit that point where you think, oh, my God, I'm totally wrong, or this trait's really off, and then you realize, wow, now it's time to learn how to balance these traits off, and that's really the art of this. And I think this is an art and a science. There's definitely an art in how you language phrases and how you present the material. The science is very systematized, how almost all of our students all over the world would get the same information. They would all have the same traits. They would see the same traits. They might not be as articulate combining them or understanding the combination, and that's something that really comes with experience. Well, good to have you on board, Melody. Let me show you what we're going to do tonight. We're going to go through a couple different things. Those of you that are following along as certification level students for your certificate, you'll want to master emotion, slant, zones. These are essential in the passing certification test. And some of you that are more interested in just for fun or even relationships, since this is near Valentine's Day, this section is on relationships, on dating. And I'll tell you, whether you're in a relationship or not, if you were to learn the material that we go over tonight and really master it, you would be everybody's counselor during this interesting time for both single people in relationships. And I'll tell you, the busiest day of the year, for those of you that are, you know, hand wringing experts or people know you as hand wringing analysts around the office, will be Monday morning after Valentine's Day. If you think about it, everybody gets cards written by their spouses on Valentine's Day. And they'll all bring them to the office. And if you make an announcement to let everyone know that you're available to help them, you know, cry on your shoulder and help them decide if this is the guy or girl for them, it's really interesting. In fact, I didn't realize how big this was, so I started doing radio interviews, you know, 15 years ago, and they would literally fax the Valentine's Day cards into the radio station, and they would, you know, have me on to analyze whether or not this couple's going to make it. And usually they wouldn't. You know, the 50-50 odds are not anyway without any data. But when you look at the handwriting, you realize people are sometimes attracted to people for absolutely the wrong reason. And some of you may have had relationships that you know that to be true. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is Susie on the phone from Colorado? Susie sent the nicest email the other day, and she said, you know, Bart's first book talked about relationships, and this was, I guess, 15 or 16 years ago, and, you know, it definitely had a younger single guy slant to it, but she was defending it. She said, you know, it may be kind of like, you know, dating as a younger kid, but, boy, I wish I had it because it would have saved myself a bad marriage. And I've heard that quote so many times. So we're going to talk about some of the traits that you find to be really unacceptable in relationships and how those things really combine. I heard Jerry's on the phone. Is that true? Jerry, how are you?
I'm doing great here in Washington, D.C.
Good. Is this Fischow?
Absolutely.
Good. Jerry Fischow has been around for years. You're probably one of the most unsung handwriting experts in the USA, I think. Don't you think?
Well, thank you. And the thing that I share with Bart is we were born on the same day in different years.
Different years. And I'm actually getting so old, I forget who's older. There was a time when I was the young kid on the block, but I guess I'm not anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're still younger than I am.
It'll always be that way till you die, and then I might catch up.
Right.
Good. Well, glad to have you, Jerry. And,
thank you.
Good. And we're getting more people jumping and joining us on the phone call. So let me show you how we're going to do tonight's class. We're going to skip around between two topics. We're going to skip around between the topic of relationships and also slant and emotional outlay. And they go so much hand in hand that they're hard to separate. And so let's go along to the slides here. And this class hopefully will stick to about 90 minutes. The class we did, the first one, was definitely way over 90 minutes or way over 60 minutes for sure. So I want to let you know that there will be an MP3. If you go to the Instant Teleseminar, that page will stay up for the next few weeks. You can always download it. So you have to come and go. If you have to go pick up your kids or mute yourself, feel free to know that both the recording, the first half of and the second half of the class, will be online. And for those of you not in the certification course, you'll see things that I talk about, and maybe I even talk about using phrases that you don't know. The first slide there is of the certification course. Most of you, like Jerry, when you first got certified, Jerry, I think your course was on cassette tapes. Am I correct?
Yes.
Cassette tapes. Well, the new membership site is all the most current stuff. So someone like Jerry, you could join for $70 a month, and then you could call Marianne. She'd upgrade you to the newest and latest videos. So there's no cost upgrade for those of you that even were certified in 96. That's what that little's there. So there's some new videos. There may be some new audios that maybe you've never heard before. Jerry, I'm not sure if you'll learn anything new, but you've been doing this for so long. He is the handwriting guy of Washington, D.C. I'll tell you that right now. If you look at this next page, it says Section 3. There's a picture of the first book I wrote, Handwriting Analysis for Love, Sex, and Relationship. And just for those of you that speak Mandarin Chinese, this is the same book in China. So I don't know, you're saying, how in the world do you do Chinese handwriting? Well, there's how you do it. You use Latin handwriting characters, such as the English-based or French, but you teach it in Mandarin, and that's how they do that. Now, the next slide is emotions, slants, zones, and pressure. And this is really the crux of the emotional outlay, the relationship compatibility. And I think that's what we'll spend a lot of time tonight discussing. And those of you that have been married or maybe divorced, you might want to pull out some handwriting samples now and look at the slant, because that is one of the indicators of compatibility or at least communication on so many levels. Now, finally, I'm going to start with a couple of questions here. what if I don't, these are frequently asked questions. The reason I start with these is there's some people on the phone that might be kind of new, and this is a good way to learn how to answer that. Or if you're just new to it, people always answer this. And these are what I call the big questions, you know, the skeptics, the people that really want to say, this could be really useful to me, but I can't get past the fact that I never print or I never write cursive. And so they're pretty much asking you to, you know, belay my doubt. Let me know how you answer this so that I can go ahead and benefit from this. Because until people believe you, until they have trust in you and some credibility, you're not going to be able to really help them. They sure won't take any graphotherapy suggestions, which is, you know, how to change your writing. That's a really far out concept if they don't trust you. So if there's certain doubts that's sitting there, these are questions that will address that. So who wants to help me answer the first question? What if I don't write cursive, I only print? Anybody?
Isn't that
it? Analyze the print.
Analyze the print. Okay, who was the female that asked?
It was Melody.
Hi, Melody. What would you say to that?
I would say, for one thing, it's a representation of the fact that they don't really want to be known,
uh-huh.
and somehow instinctively they know that cursive kind of exposes them.
Well, that's probably more accurate than they would want to hear, but I think that's a really good good analysis. Jerry, would you agree with her?
Yes. According to Ted Widmer, who's probably the grandfather for his book The Printer, that's one of the characteristics of a printer, is someone who hides his personality from others.
Good. And people will think, I just print because it's faster. Right? I mean, that's the reason they'll do it. And I still think it's true that most men do print more than women, or they perceive themselves as printers, but that doesn't mean that they're block printers. And so I think it is a valid truth that there is one personality trait. But there's two things you have to get to distinguish this question. First of all, they're asking this because they don't really believe that they can be read because they print. And if they don't believe that it gets valid because they print, then you can say, well, I can do printing, but cursive is always more accurate because cursive is really your upstrokes and downstrokes. There is a general meaning for printing. Sometimes I say that and sometimes I don't, because remember, when you talk in generalities, they can be true part of the time, but at the same time, they sound ambiguous. And so one of the things that I attempt to avoid when someone is skeptical is I don't want to say things that could be ambiguous. I have nothing against astrology, but one of the PR problems astrology has is many of the personality traits that they assess could be applied to many, many people. And so I want to avoid those generalities. And I think it is a generality. I think it's true, by the way, that people who print do tend to be more masculine in their energy level. They don't tend to communicate as clearly and as effectively, and they sure don't emote as well, more like the masculine athlete versus the very feminine person that talks. Those are generalities, almost like David Data, who's a relationship expert, talked about female masculine energy, and that's true. Now, they'll argue with you and say, well, I just write because it's faster. Well, it's also faster not to express your feelings. It's also faster to get angry. It's also faster to say, sit down and shut up, than negotiate with your children. There's a lot of masculine qualities that definitely would fall in the category of efficiency or dominance that would be considered masculine. So you can do printing. It is very difficult to do block printing, and it was even more difficult to do block architectural type printing, like engineer printing. And you will get some of those occasionally. I think the hardest job I ever had was I did some hand analysis at a Christmas party 15, 20 years ago at Nortel, which was basically, you know, 200 engineers and their wives. And most of them printed, and most of them printed like an engineer. And that was complicated to find the differences and the subtle distinctions between the printing. But if you can get them to write cursive, you're good to go. Comments or questions on that question?
This is Jerry.
Go ahead, Jerry.
I have found sometimes that if somebody is such a staunch printer, you ask them to write in cursive, and it looks like a five-year-old, a fifth grader, excuse me, where it's just, they mentally don't know how to form the letters.
Right, they've forgotten because it's been so long. And in that case, what I do is I just take part of it, because sometimes you will see some unconscious traits pop out, like a stinger or something like that. But I also wouldn't hold them completely responsible for anything negative. Is that what you would do, Jerry?
Well, yeah, but I've also found some really interesting things. I'll see printers who actually slant vertically to the left. and cursive that are DEs.
Interesting. And we'll get to what a DE slant later, but backwards and forwards. And remember, if somebody prints, they are repressing their emotional outlet or repressing their feelings. So they may react emotionally, but you wouldn't know it because you can't read it, because cursive is upstrokes. Upstrokes is where you get slant. And this is today's class. We'll talk about that. By the way, we won't actually go into how you measure slant in detail. The 101 course, especially the newer one in the last 3 years, has a very, very detailed video, and the 101 book has detailed instructions. And I have found that it takes a solid 3 hours with even the brightest group to stand over your shoulder and really work through that. So if you haven't mastered looking at slant by just glancing at it, realize that you're not alone. And it really does take discipline to do those slants, to draw your dots, and to actually measure it over and over and over. So we'll talk about how you measure slant, because that, I think, was probably one of the biggest indicators, both in relationships, in sexuality, and in personality compatibility that we can get to. And obviously, if they're block printers, they can't do that. Great, thanks for your feedback. Now, finally, what if my writing changes all the time? One of the biggest questions you'll ever get. I think it's a valid question. It goes to the heart of two things. It goes to the heart of the science of handwriting, the uniqueness of handwriting. It also kind of goes to the heart of the forensics. As some of you may know, I testify in court as a document examiner of forensics. One of our schools, one of our programs, is a $15,000 two-year program for forensic document examiners. So it's a full-on certification. You can start a career in that. But the principle of that business and the principle of why we can go to court and testify in a criminal trial on a gang murder, which is what I did last week in Los Angeles court, is that your handwriting might change all the time, but your handwriting doesn't change enough to disguise who you are. So there's still unconscious clues to people's writing that can reveal who they are. And that's the principle of an entire industry of forensic examining. So when someone literally says, my handwriting changes all the time, how can that be accurate? Who wants to take a stab at how you'd answer that? Melody, Jerry, we've heard from you. Anybody else on the line that's not shy? I know you're there because I'm seeing you online, and I know how many people on the phone. How about the lady from Canada? What's your name?
Vanessa.
Vanessa. What do you think, Vanessa? What if they say, oh, my handwriting changes all the time?
Well, then we would say just pretty much exactly what you just said, that, you know, there's going to be consistency, even though it may change a little bit over time. You're going to find some consistency, and that's what you go with.
Good.
I guess that's what I'd say.
That's a good try. Have you had this with people yet as you're learning how to do this?
Oh, no. I'm totally new at this.
Cool. Well, welcome. Yeah. Let me tell you what I say, and this really helps, is I say, you know, most people think their handwriting changes a lot, but only a few people really changes in slant. And those people are either crazy, they're multiple personality, or they're addicted to sugar. Are you one of those three people? Let me repeat that, just if you guys are writing this down. It's a great tip to be interactive. Is usually people think their handwriting changes all the time, but yours probably doesn't. You know, there's really three kind of people that thoroughly changes enough to make it, you know, where you get two different results. You're either totally crazy, you're multiple personality, or you're addicted to sugar. Are you any of those? And they'll usually laugh and they'll say no, or maybe so-and-so. And the sugar is really interesting because it is shocking how the most normal people or the most calm people, if you look at the writing, they've got slant that goes backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. And that's usually a pretty good, and I don't know if it's 100%, but I would say strong 75-80% that those people have major sugar, blood sugar level issues.
Andy, Mark.
Yeah, go ahead. Who's this?
This is Melody.
Hi, Melody.
I was just going to say, multiple personalities and crazy. I wonder which one I am. Actually, on a normal basis, my slant doesn't change, but just wait till I'm emotionally upset.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, totally different writing, fingers, slants more. I mean, I literally can write a letter, and in the middle is two paragraphs where I'm describing something that I'm struggling with that is a very emotional issue, and those two paragraphs will be more slanted. And the rest will be consistently one slant, and the two emotional subjects will be totally at a deeper slant.
That's funny. Melody, you've just scared away all the men on the phone call that are single. I want you to know. Well, first of all, that is normal for your handwriting to change with the content. However, most people can't notice it. Obviously, if you're writing about your father and your father was abusive, you may have stingers. That would be a logical situation. But you are very emotionally expressive if you can do that. But it's really neat to be able to observe that in your own writing and ask, wow, you know, where is this coming from? But thank you for sharing that. I don't think you're crazy as much as observant. In fact, one of the definitions of insanity is they have no idea they might be crazy. So your awareness that you might be a little off kilter makes me think that you're sane. So I think you're okay there. But I do. I think that people's writing changes a little bit. Sure, it changes with mood a little bit. It changes size with alcohol content or even social aptitude. As you know, the smaller your middle zone writing is, the more focused you are. You definitely would have a difference if you just wake up from meditation or you've had a real, you know, meandering morning, you're drinking coffee, you're mellow, there's no kids around, writing in your journal, then compared to, let's say, a couple hours into going out dancing, then, of course, you would be much smaller. Going out dancing would be much larger. It would be larger, sloppier. And one fun experiment, if you're really curious about how much your handwriting changes, is we actually, because of our forensic document examining program, we didn't have any first-hand evidence of how alcohol affects handwriting. So we did a very unprofessional experience where we got two of our students tossed and schnockled, and then we wrote handwriting every 30 minutes to see how bad the neuromuscular control dissipates and at what intervals you would lose recognition of the writing. And you can pretty much still tell the person, but obviously by about, I think it was 4 or 5 shots, the experiment was terminated due to illnesses.
Now, Bart, this is Jerry. There's a Seagram's webpage that shows handwriting after 1, 2, 4, and 7 drinks.
Yeah, there's a famous ad from the 70s sponsored by Seagram's. It is the exact same experiment. And Phyllis Mattingly, one of my very first teachers, she used to carry that and use it in all her lectures, which is funny because she was a non-drinker. So she was like, here's what happens, it changes. It does help people to realize that it does affect your changing in alcohol. Do you know what page that's on, Jerry?
Actually, Seagram's, it's no longer on the website. It's on handwriting.org.
Okay, yeah, they could find it.
Has it.
Yeah, that's
hey, Mark?
Yes, ma'am.
I was over at the coffee place the other night, and I saw this birthday card. And it was someone had done it like that. We were drinking, and it started out with "Happy birthday to you," and then the very last was all big and out of whack, and was and whose birthday is it anyway? Because they have written it, you know, 30 minutes between each time, and talking about.
So they were kind of schnockered, is what you're saying, and it was noticeable.
In that way.
Good, very good. Okay, good. Thank you, Dr. Mary. Now, finally, left-handed, then we'll talk about go into some relationship stuff. What if I'm left-handed? Essentially, left- and right-handed people do make compensation for that. Statistically, you're not able to tell if someone's left- or right-handed, scientifically. However, there are differences in the way somebody holds a pen, pushes certain letters versus pulls the pen. And in forensic doc examining, there are some books that say under a microscope you could tell if somebody was writing with their left or right handed because of the angle. I think it's a very specialized skill. It's probably not a skill that you even need because the traits or personality traits could be revealed regardless. The biggest communication or misnomer is that people that tilt to the left are left-handed. That is the biggest confusion. People that are left-handed and their writing slants to the left, they feel that that's only because they're left-handed. Who wants to take a stab at what you think that really means, despite their excuse?
That they were repressed because they were chastised for writing with their left hand.
Good guess, Jerry. Who else wants to take a guess at that? I heard a woman laugh. I want to hear from you. Nobody. Jerry, you've intimidated everybody. I'm going to have to put you in the corner because you're just too intelligent.
I've just been doing this a long time, like you.
Yeah. How about Brian? Are you on the phone with us?
Yes, I'm here.
What do you think that means if somebody thinks they're left-handed, or they're left-handed, but it slants to the left? What do you think that might mean?
Like Jerry, it's just about different.
Well, they also think that all left-handers slant to the left.
Right. Brian, do you feel like that they think that they're different, or do you know what the left-handed slant would indicate?
Repressive
was what he said. Okay, good. We're losing your sound a little bit. It is repressive, and people that slant to the left, you know, straight up and down is 90 degrees, they are emotionally repressed. They had some sort of trauma, and we're going to go through some of the slants tonight. We call that an FA slant. You have to measure it to be sure, but essentially it's backwards compared to what most people do or the majority of people. Those people did have trauma. Those people aren't as expressive. Those people do have, quote, issues with being social. So left-handed people may have those emotions, and thus they may feel left out. And I think one of the more common probably issues back in the 60s or 70s was that many of the desk and many of the baseball gloves were for right-handed people. And so left-handed people sometimes did get left out. I don't know if that would be in itself a reason to feel ostracized or a reason to feel withdrawn or even abused, which is what often that FA slant is an indicator there was some kind of trauma. But it's surprisingly high percentage of people that are left-handed also have a little bit more of a left-handed slant. I would say just as percentage, it might be true, but one doesn't create the other, meaning the cause is not the symptom. Just because you're left-handed doesn't make you introverted. However, I think more left-handed people might have some inverted tendencies, and it just could be the social situation, such as the left-handed baseball glove and my favorite, the left-handed baseball bat and the left-handed baseball ball, which, of course, is a joke we used last week, which is why it's not funny this week. Thank you. Okay, moving on to the slide at hand. Let me reset the class here if you just joined us. My name is Bart Baggett. This is Handwritten University's certification level teleclass. This is class number 2 of 10 classes. Those of you that have listened to the home study course or DVDs or some of you in the cassette tapes, this is very similar to a live class we would do where we take a particular topic, talk about particular traits that would be from the handwriting, and then do it and apply it the best we can to a particular context. And tonight, the context is particularly relationships compatibility that can be romantic or business. And so stay tuned here. Those of you that join us, if you have to leave or come in early, the MP3 will be on this page. And I also want to tell you that in the next 15 minutes, I'm going to talk about something really special about this conference, as well as a way that you guys can get certified in this difficult economy. So stay tuned. I'll tell you something that a lot of you probably don't know as far as the certification program. So now if you look at the handout, I left some notes here, the Handwriting Certification course. Those of you that are in the course, you know that there's 10 modules, and there'll be 20 tests on Ray Walker's book. And those of you that are just having the cards, you'll see the cards right here on the next page, Socioselective Sexual Imagination. Now, those of you at the beginning, I want to give you a caution and also some freedom at the same time. These traits are amazingly accurate, and these traits are only the tip of the iceberg. So simultaneously, I want to tell you that, yeah, if you see them, they'll be accurate, and you'll find a lot of agreement and get a lot of insight. And without putting them into context of the rest of the writing, I don't think it's fair to be completely judgmental. And I think that especially there's an entire market, and many of you may be aware of this. It's been 20 years. There was a book called The Game. There's a VH1 show called The Pickup Artist. Is anyone familiar with that TV show?
No.
You are all too old, aren't we? it's quite a lucrative market for men just to meet women. Like the old magazine, and, you know, the weightlifter kicks the guy's sand in the guy's face and he goes and lifts weights, and there's a whole market, and there's even a show on VH1. And for many years, those individuals, mostly men, have used these deck of cards to just break the ice with women. And they've sold these cards and they've used it. They basically used it as sort of not a con, but just sort of a breaking the ice. Some of them never really memorized the traits, but those that did, it was like, this is what it is. And I think that is both interesting. It's a great way to be social, just like you, those of you that are around the office or a Christmas party. But I think it does a disservice more than a service, because there's so much more that can be gained from handwriting than an individual card. So as we go through these traits, I'm going to try and put them in context for you and also try and give you some index of or some indication of how you would apply that to the gestalt or to the entire handwriting as a whole. Because although it's really easy to take one trait like sexual imagination and look at that writing and go, wow, you know, this person's amazingly sexual and is going to have all my fantasies come true, that's probably not always true. And there's so many things in the writing that could actually tell you that answer, if indeed that's what you were looking for. And so if, with permission that this is a PG call, and we can talk about what those things might be, and also in the context of being in a relationship versus just being single. The first book I wrote, the handwriting book, is really for single people. It's about choosing a mate, not about being in a relationship. Hopefully this call, as well as some of the newer material that I publish, is about being in a relationship, not just choosing somebody. Because obviously it would be easy just to choose or unchoose people consistently and end up alone at 60 years old. So, first of all, socially selective. Let's talk about the actual trait and then what it means. The reason I find some people have failed the certification test, and unfortunately I would say about, I guess, 40 to 50% have failed at the seminar recently, is they may know a trait, and they may know a trait name, but they don't fully grasp the meaning of what that means in context. So they if they memorize the cards, that's one thing, but you have to put it in context. So socially selective at a party might have a different context than socially selective in the office place, for example. So first of all, what does socially selective mean as a concept? Anybody want to take a gander at that? Who hasn't spoken yet? Let's pick on somebody new. Nobody's so shy. Does everybody have big humps on their M's these days?
Not I, said Igor.
Not I.
Don't have much trust.
Don't have much trust. Go ahead.
No, I'll make this one easy. You're very selective about who you socialize with. There you go.
Yeah, so socialize with. Now, does this relate to sex, relate to relationships, to kids? What context would this mean? What does social mean?
With who you communicate with?
I like communicate. I think people might communicate with people they don't trust, but it's going to go deeper than that. What's another word
right.
for communication with people that they're intimate with?
Who you share yourself with, I guess?
Yeah, that's more like it. I think the word intimacy is the word that has gotten the most agreement over the years. Is you're selective with who you share intimate details with. And what's really strange is I've met men that would be socially selective or even antisocial that would define themselves as sexually promiscuous.
Right.
And that is counterintuitive or even doesn't really make sense to what may be in the book. If someone's socially selective, well, they shouldn't be promiscuous. How would you explain that?
Well, I think that can be explained because they're not necessarily, you know, sharing themselves or being, you know, intimate in a on an emotional level, just a physical.
I couldn't agree with you more. And of course, if you see socially as only sexual, then of course you're missing the point. You are correct, and it's more intimacy, which means emotions, and that changes the game completely because handwriting is emotions. And then also we see actions in certain things, and of course that would make a big difference. So sure, you can tell some promiscuous traits, and we'll talk about what those might be, because that's something you may want to avoid, especially if you're looking for monogamy. And so that's that. Now, so as a general rule, though, socially selective would be more inclined to monogamy or less?
More.
More. Yeah, I think that's true. In general, more inclined... Well, there's me listening to me. How about that? Okay. I just put everyone on mute for a minute until that person decides to hit star six. Well, oops. Star six. I guess with the relationships class that then. Sorry, I got laughed at for that one. Okay. Socially selective.
Going to mute everybody, so everybody hits star six.
Sorry, I got laughed at when I said star sex, and I lost my own train of thought there. I had to stop and shared my own self-amusement. Okay. Here's the thing about the lower loops, and this is so simple. The size of the lower loop is intimacy and imagination. That's the bottom line. And so whatever scale that is width-wise, that's imagination. Now, there's two kinds of scales you could look at, width and length. And so look at the next card. Whoever's washing their dishes, it would be joyous if you would hit star six. Just joyous. I'll wait. I think somebody attempted to do that. Thank you very much. So really length and width, and this is a problem, I think, a mistake I made many years ago, is I thought, well, there's a big why. The person has a lot of sexual imagination. The person might be promiscuous. The person's more open to sex. Just because they have a wide why, like a wide width, doesn't necessarily mean that that imagination would get down to the physical realm. It could be Harlequin romances. It could be imagination in business. It could be something stopping them from actually, you know, having intercourse or having the you know, tangible relationship, which we think of as sexual relationships. But here's the two distinctions. The length is the sex drive. Okay? The length is drive. The width is imagination. So the width is intimacy, and the width is trust, and the width is this desire to engage with other people emotionally. And then also you tend to imagination. Now, this card called sexual imagination is both. So if you have both, you know, width and length, then you've got somebody with a large sexual imagination and will probably act on it. Now, I guess I'll ask a question that could backfire. Does anybody have any stories they want to share about whether somebody has agreed or not agreed to being told they had a big sex drive with this big Y? Yeah, what's your name?
Melody.
Melody, go ahead.
I'm not shy.
Good, Melanie. We don't like shy people on the phone. It's no fun. It's like a conference with nobody there. So did you find someone with this big Y?
I've gotten to where I describe it as physical drive and a good imagination, because I've hit a couple people that were athletes and kind of sick and not able to exercise, and they showed basically a very similar Y. And so now I say, well, you have a really strong physical drive and a pretty good imagination. So unless you're an athlete and you're frustrated, and then that usually gets me by the people. Someone's faxing.
Well, I had to mute everyone out because there was a fax machine there. The beauty of live phone calls. Melanie, I think it's true, because you would have big imagination in athletes, so that's very good. And the other side of the is true. Somebody with a large physical appetite, such as an athlete, is also prone to getting in trouble sexually. There is no lack of stories of Kobe Bryant and other famous athletes with such a large testosterone base, you know, especially a professional athlete, that it shouldn't be a shock to us to feel that maybe that testosterone is misdirected. And so that doesn't surprise you at all. And there are exceptions. Like I said, you could see big imagination, and if they're not getting their needs met through exercise, it's probably being redirected in a sexual format. And that's true. So I think it's safe, although it's not true all the time. If someone has a really long and heavy writing with the big Y, it's safe to think that they've got a bigger sex life, or at least a more active sex life, within the confines of relationships or without. Let me unmute and see if our fax machine's ended.
Oh,
good. Okay. Well, we still have the dishes, but at least we don't have a fax machine, which is good. Okay. Let's move on to something else, fear of trust. And I mentioned something a minute ago about depth of handwriting, the heaviness of handwriting, as well as the slant. And all of these have to be taken into consideration with your compatibility. And so what our real goal is for tonight, as well as for the rest of it, is to establish whether or not somebody is emotionally compatible with each other. And so it's not just whether they have the same type of why. I think that might be the least amount of compatibility, as much as they have emotional communication ability and they emotionally communicate at the same level. A friend of mine runs a company called Match Matrix, and his algorithm, which is basically based on your birth date, repeats this sort of compatibility chart based on energy, financial values, as well as a couple other things like a relationship, romance, communication, etc. And surprisingly, even though I don't even understand how it works, I think the web address is mymatchmatrix.com. I think that's what it is. But it's shockingly accurate. And one of the things that they do compatibility with people is communication. And if you have a similar communication style, the odds of them giving you a high approval rating is very high. And for me, for handwriting analysts, that communication style is usually a combination of how talkative you are and what slant. So if you both had DE slants and you both had similar O's, then you would have a very similar communication style. Also, if you combine that with the letter M or N. What does the M or N mean? Do you know, Melody?
Well, if it's grounded, you're more of a look at the whole picture, get all the information before you make a decision. And if it's more pointed, then it would be, you think quicker, kind of shoot from the hip.
Yep.
And then also the M, you can have the high bump on the right, which would mean you're kind of self-conscious. And then the other way, if it's slanted down towards the right, then you're more of a diplomat.
Good, good. Well, specifically, those are traits from the imperfect. Specifically, as far as intelligence is thinking processes, is if you have pointy M's, there's a faster ability to decipher data. And if it's rounded, it's a slower tendency and also more cumulative. So these are three processes that if you combine them, the emotional slant, the thinking patterns, and even the tendency to be open or not, that's communication. And if all three of those match, then these people are going to have a higher communication. There's something called emotional EQ versus IQ, emotional maturity. I'm not sure I can quantify that in graphology, but I will say that if you have a similar slant, similar M's or N's, then you think and process information at a similar processing way. And slant, you're doing really well. Now, finally, fear of trust, which is the next card here. This is actually renamed. Some of you may have originally learned this as something else called antisocial. Let me know the word for what antisocial means in the new definition, 2009 definition. Antisocial is really a negative quality. It's almost like antisocial behavior. It's someone that's a terrorist. It's someone who actually destroys society, someone who doesn't want to be part of society, and not necessarily just the opposite of social, which I think when this was originally written, and I know when Dr. Walker originally wrote his first books in the 70s and 80s, it just meant, well, there's social people, and then there's antisocial people. And I think that's what it means. The reason I changed it is that I think the word antisocial is now actually part of the lexicon of psychiatrists. And not only do I not want to be part of that lexicon and part of that world, but also it is a disease or a particular neurotic personality type that is very specific in behavior. So when you see this, I would encourage you to not use the word antisocial. Talk about the trust issue. And it's really just one notch more repressed than the socially selective. So what do you think is a good example of lack of trust? Anybody want to describe that trait about somebody they know?
A hermit,
very possibly. I mean, there's just no room intimately for somebody else. So if somebody has no room for intimacy, will they live alone?
Most likely.
They prefer to. Even if they're in a relationship, they're probably emotionally quite solitary. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so they made their way where they're not engaged. Would they be the first one out the door going to every party that the office throws?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably not. Definitely not. And this goes back, and this class is about sex, sexuality, this person more or less likely to have many lovers?
Less.
Yeah, less likely, because for most people, sex takes intimacy. Okay. Now, obviously, if he's paying for sex, then there would be no intimacy, and that would be a possibility because he would get sexual needs met. I guess if the Y or the G was very long, you would have a long physical drive with no intimacy. You know, obviously, most people are not going to volunteer for that without pay. You know, that's not how especially females, want to have relationships is, hey, I want to have sex and no intimacy. That's not what most people are looking for. So I guess it's possible to have somebody with lots of sexual partners, but primarily probability-wise, this person is going to have very few partners or at least lack trust. And I hear something that you only get on a live phone call. Are you ready? Sometimes if someone annoys me and I don't like how they're treating me with the analysis and I see this trait, I will then use my sarcasm, which I'm very skilled at, and will tell them that, very loud I might say, so the whole room can hear them, that it's official, they have the masturbation why.
You need to know I know someone with a why like this.
Well, you now have evidence to embarrass them to the entire public if they cross you. And what's really great about that joke, by the way, especially if it's a guy, you know, all men are guilty of it at one point in their life, so they can't really deny it's not true. So it's kind of like the question, when did you stop beating your wife? There's really no good answer for that. So if you throw that out there, know that you've just, you know, checkmate them, and they're probably going to get really red and plan some revenge on you later. But what I found is it is true, and I've had people come up to me and actually just, oh, my God, how did you know that? Like literally, like they're confessing they have some kind of problem. Like, is there a pill for this, you know?
The person I knew was very promiscuous, but they also had a lot of, you know, they were very private, but they would lie and manipulate people. So they had a really strong sex drive, but they wouldn't share the real them. They shared the facade.
Got it. They shared the facade, and that's also very possible. And you understand that these people are lonely, you know, and whether we make jokes or not, they're lonely. And really, if you want to know the truth behind that joke, as cruel as it might seem, but some people can be cruel back when you're attempting to help people and they're skeptical, is that the length of the why would be the sex drive. So if there's no length there, there's probably no drive at all. So if there's no drive, there'd be no reason to do that. But if it had a really long why with no trust, it is going to happen. I'll tell you a hysterical story. I was at a Christmas party just a few, I guess, you know, at Christmas time a few months ago. It was a lady named Carol Allen. And in fact, those of you that are part of the membership site, and I know all of you got, many of you got like a one-day pass for sure, there's a new file I just posted today called Carol Allen Relationship Interview. And she's this radio host who interviews people. Anyway, she's a fabulous host. The audio file is called Creating Chemistry, and so go ahead and download that today if you get a chance to. It's really an interesting interview. But at her house, it was this Christmas party, there was a kid there that was by far the geekiest guy I'd ever seen in my life. Like you couldn't have defined geek better, and he was playing the piano, and his, I don't know if his pants were around his waist, but they might as well have been, you know. Anyway, ended up he was either the winner or the star of a show called Beauty and the Geek. And so he was not only a geek, but that was his thing. I mean, they had cast him in a whole season of Beauty and the Geek, and he had this particular why. And so I leaned over, did not embarrass him. I said, and here's this other problem you have, blah, 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 masturbation, blah, blah, blah. And you just, his face turned so red. But you know what he did? Instead of getting mad and upset, because I did it with such class, he's like, I got to talk to you outside. And he's like, all of a sudden, I'm his therapist. I'm his best friend. He can't get a date. He's embarrassed because he's got this problem. Anyway, it was really, I really felt like I had the ability to help somebody. And I really spent 20 or minutes really talking to him about social problems and about self-consciousness, about the things that he dealt with, which literally were phobics. I mean, he was phobic of girls, and he had all these self-consciousness, and he had a certain skill set in chess and piano, and I mean, really, he was the true blue, I'm the geeky guy. But by analyzing the handwriting, it was an entree into sort of his spirit. It was the ability to really connect with somebody, and even with that joke, which is normally kind of caustic, I delivered in a way which said, look, this is a real problem. You don't trust anybody. And you know what? You're smart, you're good-looking, but you're not trusting people, and because you don't trust, people don't approach you. And so if I think of the first time he realized that maybe it's not because he's a geek that girls don't like him. It's because he doesn't trust anybody. Because energetically, if you're closed off, people will be closed off to you. And so that's the big cycle that a lot of people don't understand, is it's not so much, you know, finding the right person, is you changing yourself to attract that. And if he really changed his whys, he definitely would be more open to relationships. And besides that, he's a TV star now, so people talk to him just because he was marginally famous at one time. I'm not sure his name, but if it comes to me, I will. Good. Okay, I want to take one second. You may have a comment there?
Yeah. Is the loner stroke then just like a compressed fear of trust?
No, it's really different. Great comment there. The loner stroke is straight down, so there's no loop. And there's no loop, we can't get a proper evaluation of the trust issue. So really, the loner can just mean, I don't need anybody, but they may want them. So I think there's two kinds of healthy loops. There's the loner stroke, which is independent, and then there's the healthy moderate Y. If it gets too big, it could be unhealthy. It gets too small, it's unhealthy. And I think really loner may be a word that could be revised to be more accurate. I think independent might be better because no one will argue that independence is a bad thing. It's only bad if you have no ability to engage with other people in relationships. And so if you see people in a marriage, one has fear of trust and then the partner has normal wise. And then a second couple where one has normal wise, one has loner, which one of those couples is having the issue?
The first one.
Yeah, the one with the fear of trust. That's where feelings are getting hurt. That's when people are being upset. That's when issues are relevant regarding trust and intimacy. The loner people can be intimate. They just need time and space. So it's a great question. What was your name? Is that Brian that I heard?
No, it's Tim.
Oh, hi, Tim. It's Tim Tula.
Hey, how's it going?
Tim Tula, one of our other doctors. You know, we have a lot of chiropractors that are certified. I think it's because of all the doctors that are open-minded into more spiritual or at least a more alternative healing. It's the chiropractic. So, Tim, thank you for being on the phone call.
Sure, sure. Hey, I was wondering, does the EE or E plus slant, then how does that exaggerate the loner?
Good. Well, any slant, of course, can exaggerate how it affects it. So E-plus people tend to express more of whatever issue they've got. It doesn't necessarily mean that they feel the issue any deeper. That would be the heaviness of handwriting. So if someone's an E-plus writer, they have more need to connect with others. And if they're a loner, it's kind of a dichotomy there. They need to connect or they need to emotionally connect, but yet they don't necessarily like lots of people around. So they're going to connect with very few people, whereas an E-plus writer with a big loop, they would be almost borderline, you know, social, like they had to be around everybody. And then also comes into play the middle zone. So there's three important factors there. And so let me give you the opposite. An FA writer that has tiny handwriting and a loner stroke, you know, that person just, Tim, would he have lots of friends or no friends? No friends. So someone with an FA backward slant, straight down Y, basically they wouldn't have a lot of friends because they don't have a need to express. And so they would be more alone than with people, even if they occasionally liked people. So it really does affect their social aptitude. Okay. Now the next card we'll go through is Ys and As. It's top of the hour. I'm going to stop for a small commercial here, about 2 minutes. I want to direct you guys to a website called handwritingconference.com. Just put this up tonight, handwritingconference.com. Now, those of you that are already certified, like Tim, I think you've already had an opportunity to come to the conference once, and I hope you guys are all coming back. For those of you that have not been certified or that have not even considered coming to the conference, here's what I've done for callers on the phone call tonight. We're going to schedule 25 certification tests at the conference in August, and hopefully 25 people will pass and walk across the stage. If you are one of the first 17 people, because that's how many courses we have in stock today in February, you're going to get a conference ticket absolutely free if you buy the home study course. And so you can either order using the button right here on this page and get a $797 ticket for free, or if you want to, you can finance the home study course, and that is $87 a month if you finance it. That gives you online access to all 101, 201, 301. Both these packages have that, as well as the 10-week course. So this is the bonus for tonight and this week. I know we're in a recession. I know some people don't have access to lots of money. If you do feel that in your life, choose the $87 option. and then save up for your ticket. It would be great to certify you in person. And those of you that feel like you want to get certified and you want to do that, take advantage of that $1,696 offer for $899 in that certification course. We will ship that to you. If there's anyone overseas, we will charge a little bit more for shipping. The rest of you, it is, I think, calculated upon checkout. So that's your offer. Hopefully you can come to that. Tim, are you still on the phone with us? I think I lost Tim for a second. I met Tim at the conference. We had got to have dinner, and I think it was really fun to certify him and to really get some feedback and get to meet these people in person. So handwritingconference.com. I realize there are a lot of people on the phone call. If this will last till February 14th or until they're sold out. So that's the benefit for being on the phone call tonight. Thank you. That's my commercial. Any questions on that offer before we move on back to the curriculum?
Yeah, what's the... hello?
Yeah,
hi.
Go ahead.
What's the total cost for getting certified if one were to jump in right now and with the aim of getting ready in August?
It would be $900, which is $899
uh-huh.
for the home study course.
Uh-huh.
And that would include your verbal test.
Okay.
People always have the option. If they go to the seminar, they can schedule a test there if they own the home study course. Because really, if you don't own the home study course, like if you got trained elsewhere, you wouldn't pass the test because they're basically using our language as well as our books.
Uh-huh.
So you're looking at $900, and then you have to buy a conference ticket if you want to test there. In this offer, you're getting both for the same price.
Oh, I see. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
You're basically getting a conference ticket for free. Now, those of you that have ordered early, we always have discounts ahead of time. I think now, like today, the ticket is like $350 or $400. You know, the retail is $800. But either way, you're getting a free ticket, which is great. If you don't have a credit card that can hold $899, you can finance it for $87 a month, and then you could buy a ticket later if you wanted to go there. But you don't have to go to the conference. You can then mail in your test. You get them graded, and then you do a verbal test on the telephone with me or one of our faculty members. So you don't have to go to the conference. I've just found that people love the multiple choice test, and then they do a verbal test on Saturday morning. And on Saturday night, we hope to walk across the stage and give you a certificate if you passed.
Okay, cool. And if you do that course, the home study, are these classes part of that, or is the whole course something that's on DVDs and whatnot?
These classes are just a bonus, really.
Okay,
a lot
cool.
of what you're hearing now is things that we did in a live seminar 2 or 3 years ago and recorded on video.
Uh-huh.
And one of the reasons we're doing the live classes is the only criticism, well, I would say the only criticism, one of the few criticisms I've had is that people don't have an opportunity to ask questions while they're going through the material because it really is self-contained. I mean, you could finish the entire course. I've had, I think the fastest anyone finished it was in 3.5 weeks. The girl had no job. All she did was listen to tapes. But she got on the phone with me, and she knew her stuff inside and out. So it's designed to be comprehensive, but I must say the ability to chat every 2 weeks and give assignments and ask feed and ask questions has really been useful. So that's why we're scheduling this. And it's 10 weeks, but it's over about a four-month period. So, yeah,
okay,
it's part of it.
You.
And both of those, as long as you're a member online, you'll keep getting passwords. And if you're a member of the online course, you'll be able to listen to that as well. So,
okay, thank you.
Good. What's your name?
I'm Jane. I'm the hypnotherapist. I listened a couple weeks ago as well.
Good talking to you. I got a letter today from a hypnotherapist that was a professional coach, or she was a coach. We were talking about how handwriting analysis can really help coaches and therapists particularly.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I invite you and anyone else that has sort of a counseling career or a secondary income is that on Sunday morning of the conference, there is a breakfast for all the graduates that are interested in making money. And so we're talking about ways that we can target and sell training to coaches and therapists and counselors and so that you can help train those people in this skill and apply it particularly to counseling. Because hypnosis has got a very different application than, say, a relationship counselor. And a hypnotist has a different application than a human resources. But basically the body of knowledge, like all the certification and the CDs and DVDs, that body of knowledge is necessary for them to apply it. But your particular expertise as being a hypnotherapist is really useful. In fact, this is the first year in about 4 years I'm not going to the National Guild of Hypnotists, which is in Boston, and it's the same date. It's August 7th. And we have our we had our conference on the same weekend just because of scheduling. But I found that people were really interested in it as hypnotherapists for sure. But I've never had really somebody step up and say, I want to be the handwriting expert of a hypnotherapist. You know, I want to write a course with you and I want to market. So that's one of the purposes of having that breakfast, is to figure out how many niches we could possibly help become teachers, because I think that it could apply to a lot more people.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So great question. And if you have any questions or want to chat with me personally, we can do it outside of this venue. Cool.
Okay.
Any other questions? And thank you for letting me time to take my little commercial and invite you guys all to Vegas.
Hey, Bart. Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, I already have a home study course, certification course. Do I get a free ticket?
No, you don't. But I bet you if you get on right now, you can get a discounted one before they go up.
Oh.
So this is just for the 2009 people. You know, I don't know that there's any way to always make everybody happy that already spent money with us. I was talking to Beth, and she laughed at me, and it was on lunch today. She says, you know, I sat and watched your emails because I knew you would have a sale sometime in the next 8 months. she waited for the one email with the best sell. But, Brian, if you call Marianne and tell her that you're very, very upset because you want a special deal, I bet you she would make you a special deal. We want to make you happy, absolutely, and we want to do everything we can to get our best people coming back, because really, that Sunday morning seminar, what I'd like to do is train trainers. I would like to not be the one on the phone. I'd like you guys to be hosting classes, and particularly if you had, you know, a 15 hypnotist doing the certification course, then it would be better for a working hypnotist to teach that class, or at least teach it with me. And that way everybody can do it. You know, I've spent 20 years building products and membership sites and all this stuff, which would take, you know, a long, long time to build, when in fact you could just buy it at wholesale, sell it retail, and you could be the teacher. So that's some of the things that we're talking about at the conference, to figure out ways that you can do that. Our franchise in India, the campus there, you know, he's doing really well. You know, he has almost 400 people in his campus over the last year. 400 people have signed up for the certification course. You know, not all of those have graduated. Obviously, people don't always finish what they start, but impressive volume of people. And he's built himself a very lucrative living just reselling our material and building it. So we know it's possible, and it just takes a lot of people with initiative and drive and really love for the science to, you know, to really jump in. So that's the place to do it at the conference. You know, plenty of time to meet with me and our faculty and brainstorm, a lot more time than I have on an average week. Good.
Thanks.
Well, thank you for doing that. Any other questions on that content? Okay, great. HandwritingConference.com, that's the website. I don't know if it'll be up if you're listening to this via audio MP3 months later, so if there is a notification, my apologies for missing the deadline. And we'll get back to the class now. So if you flip to PDF file, we're still looking at the Y chart. I think this is 3G. You're looking at the Y chart and then aggressiveness. Now let's talk about aggressive real quickly. Aggressive is both a gestalt shape and it's a trait on its own. And one of the cool things about this particular system of understanding graphology is all the traits have certain shapes and they have meanings. And I'll teach those meanings sort of later in the class, but then you'll say, oh, my God, it makes so much sense. Analytical, argumentative, stubborn, and aggressiveness, they're all V shapes. And then you go, oh, there must be some pattern with people who make Vs and sharp angles versus who people make arcades. So we do teach that, and what I think is the biggest challenge with, say, if you've read someone else's book, especially someone like Clara Roman, who's got a very best-selling book on gestalt graphology, it starts with shapes, it starts with theories, and by the time you're like on chapter three, you're completely confused because it doesn't bring it down to something specific. And so I have to say both systems work if you were to graduate in them, but I have found that this system of starting with the traits and say, look, this is aggressive, this is what it means. Then you come back later and go, okay, well, it means this because the angle appears in which zone? Can you tell me which zone the angle is?
Lower.
It's in the lower zone. Lower zone has to do with what?
Physical.
Physical. So aggressiveness, mentally or physically?
Physically.
Got it. And see, it's very logical. Oh, that's why that trait means that. And so, you know, when you begin, it's just that's what it means. Now you understand why it means that. And so emotionally, this person trusts people or doesn't trust people?
Doesn't trust.
Doesn't trust. Doesn't trust and pretty much hates them. You know, he's mad at everybody. And this same trait, if you look at the first Y on the aggressive card, that first Y has a strong beginning upstroke, which is a straight line. Let me know what that means.
My favorite stroke.
Your favorite?
Is it resentment?
It is the resentment stroke, right. And, in fact, that may be a little curve, but the straighter that is, the more resentment. Well, if you look at the parallel, there is a parallel between that stroke and the aggressive stroke. But the difference is what? The zone. The difference is what zone it's in. So that's the difference. So it's a very similar stroke. Now, of course, if you had an angle, it would be an identical match there. But resentment in that middle zone means they're resenting something going on today, like the boss or the girlfriend or the wife or the, you know, the money or whatever. If it goes into an H, what are they resenting?
Ideas.
Ideas. And what would be the most common metaphor? And here's what I love when people finally get it, is that the trait is the trait, but the art is in the metaphor. So if it is ideas, what is one common category of ideas that most people can relate to?
Would it be like a religious zealot or something?
Boom, religion. Most people, especially in America, grew up with a religion. And in America, it might have been Christianity, you know, 76% of the time. Not always true. So if you have resentment, it is a very safe metaphor to go, you know, you resent something philosophically. I would say you're still pissed off at what they taught you in Sunday school. Okay. Is someone scraping their teeth or something? Do you hear that strange noise? Is their tire popped and I'm hearing this? Thank you for stopping, but I know it's always good to scrape your teeth. Believe me, I love good teeth. It's very important to me. I just would choose not now to do it.
A little sarcasm.
No, I wouldn't make sarcasm. I would not choose now to do it. I'm getting so much more kind at my old age, aren't I, Jerry?
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Mellow.
Very true. Now, I mentioned that, and I'll go into this more. In fact, there's a video called How to Deliver Metaphors in your package. But specifically, there is a sequential structure to how you deliver a verbal analysis. And the metaphor is really the final piece, because the trait means, yes, they've got resentment and unresolved resentment at something in the philosophical area. We don't know what that means specifically. But the metaphor of pissed off at something they taught you in Sunday school is so specific that most people can connect with it and understand it better. Now, clearly, if you're in India, that wouldn't make any sense because they don't go to church on Sunday, or if you're in Israel, or whatever the case would be. But if you're in a Judeo-Christian culture, then at least what they say in church or synagogue, that might hold true. So you got to judge your audience. And the reason I say that is the only time I would give a different analysis if I'm just switching the metaphors to match my target audience. The trait doesn't change. The meaning of the analysis and the personality profile never changes across all cultures. The metaphor I choose might change. What I say to a single 22-year-old woman would be different than a 78-year-old married woman. Clearly, there could be different metaphors about dating or men or relationships, father versus son versus boss. That might change. And so that's something that may take you time to really adapt, but that becomes sort of the art of it. And I think one of the reasons people have continued to put me on television and have a really good gift or 20-year-plus experience, you can call it whatever you want, of analyzing the context of the situation, twisting the metaphor to really pick the right words. And I think that's probably one of the advantages of listening to CDs over and over and over and over. I keep hearing my voice. Am I hearing my voice in my head, or is that my voice on the phone line?
That was my fault. I clicked on one of the links and it's your voice.
And I just keep thinking, man, I love myself. I keep hearing myself talk in my head. It's so confusing. Okay. Now let's look at the Y chart. I just want to make sure everybody's very clear on this. And I make this so simple that you may go, wow, this is so simple. This is all there is. Even after 10 weeks, you will have questions. Okay. But the idea is to make it sequential. So you go, oh, I see the pattern of a Y. I see how the Y gets bigger, it gets smaller, et cetera. And so if you're looking at the Y chart, which is the very next one, it is basically the different Ys. Does anybody have a Y that they've never seen before? I think I have to turn my head sideways on my computer. Loner. Loner with lack of drive. What does that mean?
Not very motivated.
Not physical.
Yeah, no physical. So here's the question. If someone had a Y with a lack of drive, would it be viable that they are suffering from a cold or flu?
Yes.
Yeah, it affects them physically. You can always say, look, it's really short. Either you haven't gotten to bed because you're sick, or are you depressed, or you know what's going on? That's very unusual to be that short. Likewise, if the Y was very, very long, they'd be very physical but not trust a lot of people. The next one's aggressive. The physically frustration, the real big fish hook. What does that mean? We haven't really discussed that. That is long, which means what?
Drive.
There seems to be width. So there's a big width, which means?
Imagination.
Right. And there's incompleteness.
Frustrated.
Yeah, so there's a desire. There's a want. There's an inability. Yeah, inability to finish it. So they've got physical frustration. And this is can be a very funny one, but also very sensitive, because if you're doing a couple analysis or compatibility, one of them is satisfied, one of them is frustrated, you've really nailed some of their potential problems. I mean, you know, he or she is not getting their needs met. And you can think of that, of course, in a physical sense, but also in an emotional sense as well. Usually it is physical. Like, literally, one of them doesn't have an orgasm, one of them does. I mean, it usually is that cut and dry. And when you're seeing that, then you know that that can be a problem.
That was in the party.
Oh, did you find one of those?
Oh, yeah, and his wife didn't like hearing it.
Oh, was she the one not getting it?
Everyone, no, he wasn't getting it. He had a frustration thing.
And did he turn red? Did he admit to it?
I just turned to him. I said, whose is this? And basically I turned around to his wife and I said, do them tonight. Yeah, everyone thought it was funny except for her.
No, she doesn't like it because she's the one
no.
that's satisfying, right?
Yeah.
Good.
What about a Y with a triangle for the loop?
That's about three slides away, so I'm going to hold on to that.
Okay.
That's a very important one, and I would say that's a very advanced trait. So we're not going to hold any punches, and we'll go through it.
Okay.
This chart is basically what you'll normally see. So if you got these down, you're pretty good. Now, there's a word called clannish. Has anybody here ever studied with International Graphoanalysis Society?
No.
They're a school that Phyllis Mattingly went to, and they went bankrupt a few years ago. Some guy had bought them out of bankruptcy. So they're a very small school that published like stuff from the 50s and 60s. You can go to almost any library, pick up a book by Milton Bunker, and you can get the same stuff that they sell for $2,000. So it's nothing new you won't find here, but there is a couple of words you might or might not use. The word clannish is something that they particularly use in IJS, and essentially it's a good word. It means, you know, clan. It means very small group of people, one that doesn't trust. So it's sort of anti-trusting, but they do trust two or three people. I don't see it much. In fact, some of the earlier books, including some of Milton Bunker's books in the 50s, and I think this is part of the reason that they're not as successful as they used to be, is they didn't really update the material, you know, because the guy passed away years ago. So when you talk about clannishness, he had things that, oh, this is typical of a homosexual.
And it was.
It was in the 60s, but you have to update that if you're going to make those crazy statements. And I think if you think about it, it might have been a typical trait of homosexuals, but it didn't mean homosexual. So why do you think that could have been a correlation, and they may have failed to just distinguish it? Anybody but Jerry, who obviously knows the answer?
That would have been a large group kind of in hiding until the 60s?
Yeah, maybe even the 80s in many parts of the country.
True.
If you came out to being gay, you would end up getting beat up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So by the nature of having this belief system, you would almost be forced to be clannish or secretive just to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the trait, you have to be careful what it means, because it may not always mean what you think it means, but the root cause may be the same. So Milton Bunker may have been correct in the 50s, but I don't think it applies now. I live in basically Hollywood and West Hollywood, which I think is, besides San Francisco, the biggest concentration of homosexuality. And they do not have that trait everywhere. You know, so many of my friends don't have any particular trait which would flag to say, hey, you're gay or not, which goes back to the argument of whether it's, you know, hereditary or chosen. And there are some that have specific traits that are like, oh, my God, that's the biggest triangle Y I've ever seen in my life. you know, and I think I'm referring to particularly this friend named Jerome, who's a stand-up comedian, who I think his definition of himself is man whore. That would be the technical word for that. And so that goes back to the triangle Y, which we're going to talk about later, but also a really large lower zone. What does large lower zone mean?
Physical imagination.
Yeah, imagination, experimental, not afraid to trust. All those things would have to go into an individual being open-minded sexually, being willing to experiment sexually. They would have to be open-minded. Now, what did we talk about the angles? Remember the aggressive angle? That would be an angle, which means analytical. You may remember the M's and N's. What do those mean at the baseline? What does a sharp or V-shaped M and N mean?
Investigative.
Investigative. Opposed to somebody who's very rounded, that is methodical, procedural, they're not the most analytical. Now, I fall short of using the word dense or stupid because that's not fair. There's people that are very methodical that are smarter than me, for sure. But there's analytical and there's more supportive. The analytical and skeptical person is more argumentative. They need more facts. You know, they're probably more aggressive. All these traits, which clustered I call sort of a masculine personality type, opposed to something more supportive and motherly. By any means, that doesn't always fall into intelligence. But likewise, the more analytical somebody is, the more questioning and probing. Now, what happens if you throw that same analytical triangle shape in the lower zone?
Triangle shape in the lower
zone. What would that mean? Supportive, goes along with it, or they're curious, or they're investigative.
Mm-hmm. Investigative.
So if someone's investigative in the sexual area, are they going to probably break the rules and or experiment in a sexual way?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what that means. So what some books call sexual perversion, what some books would say, oh, this person's homosexual, I disagree. I think both those are symptoms of a curious individual with an open-minded sexuality. Now, you could say that, well, wait a second, it's perversion. What does perversion mean by that? Anybody have a Wikipedia open? What does perversion mean?
I'd just say different than the norm.
Yeah, perverted would be outside of the range of normal, perverse. Now, what is normal in Omaha, Nebraska is probably different than normal in West Hollywood, California.
Mm-hmm. You think?
I don't live in Omaha, so I don't know how weird they get. But you see my point, if there's a social norm, then somebody being outside that norm, it would be very different. What is that wonderful population in Pennsylvania where they don't use electricity? Amish. The Amish country.
Amish.
A friend of mine wrote a book about her Amish, and she's a true story. She is a professional dominatrix. Naturally, she lives in Hollywood. She was born and grew up in an Amish culture. Now, I've never thought of anyone rebelling so bad to go from Amish to dominatrix, right? But her whole family is just this Amish. They don't have electricity, her mother, her granddads and stuff. What an interesting, you know, dichotomy. So she goes out to Hollywood and becomes very strange. So she definitely is far outside the norm, you know, so far outside the norm that people would all think she's freaky.
You know what her slant was?
She actually was an F.A. slant, if I recall correctly. Hmm. Yeah. And I immediately think of the word issues is what I think when I think of her. And no, I didn't date her, for those of you that read my earlier works. I'm way beyond dating crazy people just to see what it's like. Huh? But listen, I did it for research for your benefit, so I hope you
appreciate it. Yeah, I was going to say that. You told us you did.
Yeah, I did. And you know what? I still revel in some of the stories and glad I got out alive, but I'm in a good place now. I'll tell you what, and we're going to talk about more about this, some of the benefits of using this in your own relationship. Can anybody think about the reason you might want to have your spouse learn graphology?
Change some of his ways?
Yeah, change him. I like that.
There's a wife for you.
There's a woman speaking from the heart right there. Nice. Here's one of the things that's most useful is when people learn new vocabulary words, in any situation, people's affinity for each other increases, their understanding increases. Has anybody taken a Tony Robbins seminar? Has anybody taken Tony Robbins seminar?
I've got some of the training tapes.
Okay. Anyone has been in a religion by any means. Any sort of group develops a vocabulary. In Tony Robbins, you know, they talk about, you know, the I movements, and they talk about NLP phrases and, you know, rapport skills, things that to me is common knowledge because I've been a fan of his for 20 years. If you know me, if you listen to my tapes, you'll say things like, oh, that person has a big K. Oh, is your big D loop showing up today? Does everybody understand what those two jokes would mean?
Yes.
Okay. Big K loop would be defiant. Big L loop is sensitivity. Your T bar is high today. Oh, your stingers are out today. I think, Melanie, you admitted to a couple of those sometimes.
Okay. Yeah, when I get angry.
Yes, only when you get angry. Yes,
yeah.
At men particularly. Right. Okay.
Justifiably, of course.
Yes.
What else does he get angry about?
Right, right, because it's so easy. Now, the reason I mention this is because any time you learn a field of study, including religion, you learn vocabulary words which define a particular context. If you will bring your spouse the Grapho deck cards, if you will let your spouse listen to even this audio program, what will happen is you guys can be aligned so that you can avoid arguments. And here's how it works in my relationship. If somebody, me or her, is doing something that falls into a category that we would consider a handwriting category, and big K, what comes to mind, right? That's the most obvious one. I've had fairly large K's my whole life. She's had fairly large K's. We come from an honest family of defiant, ass-kicking guys, right? Oklahoma, Texas, you know, get in their face. I think it's barbaric and pathetic, but that is the family that I saw, and I was like, wow, and I know her family also is the ones that would go brawl in the bar in Oklahoma. All that has come by very honestly. If there's a situation when one of us is being defiant, instead of saying, honey, you're being a defiant brat, which would be the kind way to do that, that's not really going to improve the situation, right? Or you're being a stubborn ass. None of that is really effective communication. But what really works well is, I would say, it looks like your big K is really poking its head right now. Wow, K is pretty large today, huh? Wow, that loop in your D is a little bigger than normal. That's what I have to say. And what that means is, this personality trait is showing up. And as long as you can do it without being condescending, which I must admit is sometimes complicated for me, people will look and go, got it. We both have acknowledged that there's a big K here. We both acknowledge that there's a loop in the D. We both acknowledge that, let's say, one of our children, like the 9-year-old, she has huge K's. She's 9 years old, and she puts capital K's everywhere. So we can just look at each other and go, wow, her K's are big today. She, as a 9, doesn't really know what we're talking about. But we know what we're talking about. And then we can sort of let it go because we realize it's an unconscious button. It's a neurological response to a context rather than just a kid being a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps a lot when you realize your spouse is not being a jerk just because they hate you. They're being a jerk because their button was pushed, and there may not have been you who pushed their button, but if you can get on the same page with the vocabulary, then it makes it a lot easier. So if you could at least get your spouse to listen to a couple of tapes or at least get the Grapho deck memorized, you would be able to communicate on that level. I've also found as a parent, it's really useful for kids to understand what self-esteem is, what enthusiasm is, even words which would normally not come into their vocabulary until they're 16, 17, 18, you know, stubbornness, that's a great trait. Because if they understand stubbornness, when you say, hey, I think you're being stubborn, the focus is off of what they're being stubborn about, and the focus shifts to, wow, am I being this way because I'm emotionally scarred for some reason, or do I really have to have chocolate right now, whatever that is. So really, I think one of the most useful. Does anybody have any stories about how you've used this in your relationship just to mitigate a fight using these things?
I'm using it to decide who I will date or not at this point. And it would have come in really handy a couple of years ago when, you know, I got some of my hooks. But the thing that I was thinking was, you know, anyone that I would get serious about, I would want to read this material and kind of be on the same page because, for one thing, I don't want someone thinking I'm way far off left court, you know, the crazy psycho lady because I believe in handwriting
right.
Morphology.
Right, and if they get some reality on what you do, they also realize it's a valuable tool, even though it may never be their thing.
Yeah, it might not be their thing, but they have to buy into the fact that it's a valid thing and not just, well, one of the crazy things she does.
Right, and if they don't actually buy into it, there's always a lack of communication there, especially if you go off to Vegas for the weekend or you're talking in this strange language, which sounds like a cult. You know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, look at the big G on her. Woo, what a stinger. I'd like to, you know, it sounds weird. But again, any religion, even any business, like, you know, I have a business degree, and I can speak in business language that most of you would understand. I can speak in Hollywood language. I can speak movie-making language. You know, for example, if you're on a movie set and somebody says, hey, you need to make that shot dirty, do you know what that means?
No. Mm-hmm.
It means that there is an arm or a limb in front of the subject. So instead of a clean shot, it's a dirty shot. It's not crisp and clean. Now, somebody not in the movie industry would think that was something sexual.
Mm-hmm.
It just means put a branch or a shoulder, you know, something to make the shot interesting. So, you know, there's no one going to accuse people on a movie set of being in a cult. But graphology or any other sort of, methodology, especially if you study NLP, that audio interview with Carol Allen talks about the course I created, I guess, in 96 called Creating Chemistry. And it's all the language of NLP, you know, rapport and VAK and all these wonderful, you know, Milton Erickson hypnosis stuff. Boy, that sounds like a cult for sure, because it's all these really complicated words that describe language and or personality assessments. So all of it will make you sound strange if you don't get your spouse involved, which is important. And secondly, they'll be able to look at your handwriting and judge you 24 hours a day like my spouse does for me. That's always fun. Okay, I know we're running late on time, but I'm going to keep going here. Does anybody need to stop and take a five-minute break or anything?
Mm-mm.
Yeah,
you
guys all have portable phones. You can hit mute if you have to get out of there. Good. Well, I hope it might go another half hour, but I don't know. But I have a couple of things I want to cover for sure as far as emotional outlay and how it affects. I'm looking at number three, looks like D. It says other stuff, HG, 3D, other stuff. Slant compatible, pressure compatible, baseline and rhythm similar, fears and defenses, do they match in anger issues? Now, we could talk about these for days, but let's talk about slant. What is the most compatible two slants with a man and a woman? Or man and man. Let's just take a man and woman. It would be easier to communicate. Anyone?
CDDE.
So if someone's a CD and someone's a DE, would that generally be a good match, yes or no?
Generally.
Yeah, I think generally that would be a positive match. You would find lots of things to compare notes on, and they're still probably one notch better. What would be which one would be ideal if you had to switch those up a little bit?
Well, the thing I know is that most people in the United States are DEs.
Yeah, I think that stat has been quoted. I would have to agree to that, but I don't know that there's a definitive solution. I actually, because I own a website called handwritingwizard.com, we have about 400,000 people have taken that test over the last 10 years, and we have a general data of what slant they are, and so we have a pretty good idea of what slant, and it definitely it is in the DE to CD range. The problem is the average person taking that test would never be able to accurately guess their own slant.
Right.
So quantitatively, it's not very accurate data compared to, let's say, the T-bar, which I think they'd be more accurate. But it's definitely not an FA, for sure. It's definitely not an E+. It's in the middle there. So the question is, do opposites attract or similarities attract? That's the fundamental question for compatibility.
Well, opposites attract, don't stick.
Well, Jerry, you're quoting my favorite author, myself.
Exactly.
I put in a book in 93, opposites attract but don't stick. There's definitely truth to polarity. Magnets always attract the opposite magnet, right? But in relationships, those opposites don't always create compatibility. When I was writing the first book, what I found from most psychological tests that I had access to that were clinically valid, and I say psychological, even that 70, 80 people makes them clinically valid, not hundreds of thousands, is that longer-term compatibility was based on similarity. And similarity, especially in values, non-personality issues are sometimes more important than character issues. certain opposites would be very important. For example, can you think of two traits where opposites would be essential? What about stingers? Opposites or similarities?
Opposites?
I'd say similarities.
I would say similarities, because if people had stingers, they would both be running the I want to cause trouble, create a challenge machine, and that would attract each other, right? So those two things, you'd want to both have stingers, because both of them would be running the same program of wanting a challenging opposite partner. If one of them wasn't running that program, he wouldn't be playing games and would get bored. So in those two traits, compatibility is important. Now, that being said, talk about stingers. If you don't know what a stinger is under the card called Issues with Opposite Sex, if you have the Grapho deck cards. And I actually changed it instead of whatever I used to call it. It's now called Issues with the Opposite Gender, if Issues with the Opposite Sex. It's not so much a challenge like, you know, somebody wanting to be a gold medal athlete, but they're actually getting their buttons pushed by somebody they can't control. So they're trying to get something trying to get validation from somebody that they can't get validation from, most commonly a little girl and her father, or a little boy and the mother, some sort of a relationship of that way that's a little bit love and hate, and that's the kind of relationship that they invite. A lot of women, if you talk to them, if they were the woman that married their dad their first time and they got divorced, most of them will tell you it's this love-hate, it's the relationship validation. They went ahead and found a man that matched the pattern of their dysfunctional father. Does anybody know women that used to do that but are overcome it now?
No, my daughter had a very functional father.
Of course.
Right, but a lot of women will say, that's why I remarried my first husband, but I don't have that anymore. And some of them, actually, their stingers do disappear. Now, back to the question is, what traits would be total opposites? Think about someone with domineering handwriting. What does domineering mean? Do we have a picture of what that might mean?
Yeah. Trying to control the whole show.
Right.
Power struggles?
Yeah, it's very next page. Three, looks like Q and three R, dominant and domineering. They are those that need control. The best example of dominant or dominating I've ever seen, I was at an event where it was it's called Author Services. They were reading a book by an author named L. Ron Hubbard. And I was at the L. Ron Hubbard stage where Michael Carradine was speaking. Anyway, they had all these great samples of his writing. And he was a prolific writer, like 600-800 books before he died. But his writing had domineering writing in huge enthusiasm, huge sarcasm, domineering, great big ego. I mean, brilliant guy. But that dominant behavior, would he have a wife that was just like that or submissive?
Submissive.
You would have to be submissive with that much strength and ego and need to control. Now, by the way, controlling is not always bad. There are roles for leaders. But remember, if you put two leaders or two chefs in the kitchen, usually you get conflict, right? So if somebody has to be in charge, then you're going to have to find an opposite. And so that is really the trick with compatibility, is deciding which traits are compatible, which are opposites. Most of them aren't as cut and dry as dominant and submissive. Now, there's not a trait that's submissive, but considering what traits would be submissive, what would you think? What if you're trying to find somebody, let's say you were a matchmaker, and your job was to take somebody that was generally a CEO, he was domineering, he was a little pushy, you can't get him into therapy to be nice anymore and heal his relationship with his mother. What kind of woman do you need to get him? You're just going to say, forget it, I'm not putting any woman up to it, it's not fair?
Rounded M's and M's and medium-sized T-bars, medium-height T-bars.
And maybe a stinger, right? Because she would probably attract somebody that was a little pushy, a little bossy, that she had to work for her love, kind of like maybe her dad. And if she had a low T-bar, it's unfair to, you almost don't want to put anybody that's dysfunctional together because you want to heal them, but that's not always our prerogative or our job. It'd be great if you can get everyone to raise their T-bar or put them in therapy, but you can't. Clearly, has anyone read Malcolm Gladwell's book called Blink?
No.
He has a couple of books, The Tipping Point and Blink.
Oh, Tipping Point,
a liar.
Yeah. One of the he has the best article about compatibility. Does anybody recall what he really said was the distinguishing characteristic of whether people were married after 7 years?
Nope.
It's so important, and it was probably about as clinically statistical as I've ever seen anyone do it. Now, Malcolm Gladwell is a researcher. He's not really a psychologist, sociologist, although he's a professor. He basically looks at other people's researches, so he has the beautiful ability to kind of aggregate data. And what he found was this one professor did these amazing researches with eye movements and blinks and electrodes on their heads, and he interviewed, like, you know, hundreds of couples, and they would talk to each other in a chair, and he could figure out what they call thin slicing within the first, like, 80 seconds whether this couple was going to make it in 7 years. And he was 80% accurate. Like, you're like, whoa, that's amazing data, you know, more impressive than handwriting, you would think. And what I got from it, and maybe you guys that read the book may have got something different from Malcolm Gladwell's work, but that chapter taught me this. The people that contained hostile comments, sarcasm, and other word, covert hostility, their relationships, what? Failed. Their relationship failed. So people with personality traits that included hostility, sarcasm, anger, or covert hostility or outward hostility failed. People that did not have those traits, not both partners, either partner, those people, their percentages of succeeding was much higher. And he was able to predict that. So if that data is true, what do you think is a recipe for failure in any relationship?
Two aggressives.
One aggressive.
Well, you said either.
Either.
First, right?
Yeah, what I'm saying is if either person was dirty, let's say a Petri dish, if either chemical that's put in the Petri dish had these negative traits, the relationship was scarred and probably failed.
I thought you meant if either it worked. Okay.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that even if you are the greatest person in the world, and your daughter's the greatest person, and she marries an a-hole, that relationship is destined to fail because he can't get past his hostility, his anger, and his issues.
Right. Okay.
So that's the strange things. Go ahead. I heard someone.
What traits do we look for then for those?
Okay. Well, that's the magic question. Who has read the section on the hell traits?
Oh, many times.
Yeah, the hell traits. And I'm sure that there's actually a whole page on myhandwriting.com. You know what? It's actually in Google. If you just write Bart Baggett hell traits in Google, you'll be able to find it. But essentially, those are the first things. But it goes much deeper than that. It goes to any trait that is negative, hostile, or defensive, or basically unenlightened. So if somebody's been abused, manipulated, even if they perceived it to have happened, didn't happen, and their defense mechanism is outwardly offensive, so sarcasm, hostility, stingers, aggressiveness, antitrust, even, you know, repression, these traits cause hostility. So what Malcolm Gladwell talks about is general hostility would be the trait, or covert hostility or overt hostility. I would call it any trait that would be outwardly hostile or dysfunctional. I mean, let's face it, there are dysfunctional traits and there's functional traits. And usually hell traits are traits that you find as unpleasant. And let's face it, think of the most unpleasant person you know. Does anybody can think of somebody like a boss or a cousin or anything?
Mm-hmm.
Name one. Who said Can you give me a first name?
Jeff.
Now, Jeff is how related to you, friend?
Ex-boyfriend.
Now, describe his worst personality traits.
Deceitful.
Deceitful. Okay, what else?
Player.
So he was promiscuous and he needed validation, right?
Yeah.
So he needed lots of validation. He was sexually promiscuous.
Yeah.
Okay, was he hostile to you? Was he condescending?
Nope.
Okay, so he was covertly hostile.
Yeah.
So he did things that didn't confront reality, but he still hurt your feelings. So deceitful. Now, think about people that you really consider an a-hole. Sometimes those people are easier to deal with because they're honest.
Exactly. You know what you're dealing with, and you can decide if you want to deal with it or not.
Right.
Instead of having the, you know, wake up 2 years later, find out he was seeing someone,
yeah.
you know, three other people at the same time, whatever.
Yeah, I've read spiritual scales of enlightenment that say that, hey, people that are just in your face angry are more enlightened than those that smile and just you know, backstab you. Because
I can
deal
with those, yeah.
You can deal with that. I know I live in Los Angeles, and I know people that are in New York, and they hate Los Angeles people because they're fake. And
mm-hmm.
L.A. thinks that New York people are just mean. But the truth is, and I've been single in both cities in the past, and I'll tell you, it's painful to go, hey, dude, I'm not interested, get out of my face, then to get a phone number and think they're going to call you and they don't. So the honesty in the New York personality is, in my opinion, better, more direct, more honest than the covert, oh, you're so great, my people will call your people, my manager will call your manager, because they're afraid to actually tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So both can be bad. Let me define what you said. Deceitful, you could see that in a number of ways. Obviously, the O is the most common way for deceitfulness. Any kind of convoluted O. I've also read that numbers, if you can't read people's numbers, they're not to be trusted with money. I think that's a generality, but it's probably not a bad one. You know, it's probably a good clue. And then needs validation. If your boyfriend always needs validation, you know, if he's got that big loop in the D, if he's got a low self-image, if he has vanity, does anybody not know where those are all found?
I don't know where vanity is.
Vanity is a very tall, skinny D stem. It looks like a flagpole. That is vain. And those people will sometimes act as if they had a big loop in their D because they need validation. And the worst combination is vanity and a low T-bar. Anybody know what that means, low T-bar?
Low self-esteem.
Yeah, so low self-image, vanity, but you know, all their friends think that he loves himself because he's always looking in the mirror. He dresses really sharp. He gets his, you know, he goes to the tanning salon. He gets Botox. He looks good. He's a good-looking man. Why would he have low self-image? Well, nobody knows that when he was 7th grade, he didn't get picked to the basketball team and it scarred him for life. Or whatever. But that's a terrible combination because then you think people have good self-images, but they don't. Now, I would say that guy definitely, you know, fell in the category of manipulative, but that's definitely not the biggest a-hole I could ever think about. The biggest a-holes I can think about are the ones with stubbornness, defiance.
He did have the stubborn.
You know, he had the stubborn, yeah. So he would not admit he's wrong, correct?
Oh, never. And the very narrow E.
Oh, two good
believed
ones.
Believed what he wanted to believe, and you couldn't change him.
Narrow E's doesn't listen.
Yeah, narrow E's doesn't listen. And by the way, I think I've got a 12-year-old that falls in that category in the house here. Doesn't
mm-hmm.
listen, stubborn, you know, sarcastic, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better in the teenage years, I think,
mm-hmm.
from what I've read. So you guys are already telling me the negative traits because all of you have lived a life.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need a graphologist to tell you negative traits. What you have to do is interpret what you've already experienced and put it into sort of a system. And that's really what I did. And I think that's probably what separates some of my books and others. Instead of just listing the traits, I feel like here's a context I found this in. You know, here's a jerk, or here's this really successful guy, or here's this movie star that's very gracious. Here's the cluster of traits that we found, and there are no negatives here, or there's positive. You know, I'd like to say there's no negative traits, but of course there's negative traits. There's negative people. There's people that are just horrible human beings. And usually their handwriting will show some of these personality traits along with it. So the bottom line is compatibility, and this is the bottom truth, which you're going to have to really practice being eloquent about, is if you find two people, and one of them is an angel, but they're really dating or they're married to one that is a class A degenerate,
yeah.
You know, you can't honestly say it's going to work out fine,
no.
Because one of them is always going to muddy the water with his or her issues. And unless they're willing to do some serious soul searching and counseling and, you know, therapy, then they probably are not going to change. And so that's the challenge of when you do compatibility, is that you have to really get in there and tell the truth. A funny story about counseling, my girlfriend Beth had been married before. She said she went to counseling with her ex-husband, and at some point the counselor turned to her and said, well, you know, have you been here before? And she goes, yeah, I've been to other counselors, and basically I'm here because he wants you to fix me. And the
mm-hmm.
counselor turned to the husband and goes, is that true? And he goes, yeah, if you'll fix her, this relationship will be just fine. And in the next session, he said, I've never told anyone this before, but you need to get out of this relationship. He is not fixable. That man is trouble. Like anyone that would be that arrogant of, hey, it's all your fault, just please fix her and let her behave like a good wife, that's not the relationship that's ever going to work. So although her counselor's job is to try and get people to stay together, if somebody is completely beyond help, and by the way, that guy, F.A. Ryder, arrogant, stubborn. Now, is he going to change? Not without huge self-evaluation and self, you know, the ability to really look at himself and go with it. And, of course, naturally, when she found handwriting, she realized, wow, no wonder I can't fix it. You can't fix an F.A. Ryder that doesn't want to be fixed. You know, there's just no way. Maybe counseling, there's obviously everyone can heal their scars with the right counseling, but not without desiring to do that. Good. How's everybody doing? We got about 10 more minutes. I'm definitely going to wrap it up at the top of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
Good, good. Now, I want to show you something. As I go through the handout, this is the three zones. Notice the emotional gauge. If you don't have an emotional gauge, it means you haven't purchased the 101 course, which is really the most basic course. Even if you get the cheap one online, you can download that in PDF file, take it to Kinko's, and print it out. So even if you're on a budget, you can at least get the gauge and then follow the steps in the 101 book to learn how to measure, because there's a particular process to measuring. You make three dots and make an angle. When you do get your measurement, you're then going to be able to get the slant, and it'll fall into one of those slants, you know, A, B, F, A, C, D. There's a chart there called the three zones and then some of the characteristics of those slants. Clearly, you should definitely know what slant you are. Melody, do you know what slant you are?
Normally, I am...
She's not straight-lining sugar, apparently.
Normally, I'm a BC to CD.
Okay,
more along the BC.
And Vanessa, do you know what slant you are?
Oh, hello?
Yeah.
Hi, I just unmuted myself.
No problem.
No, I don't.
Okay. And you know what? It takes a while to do it. Now, if you're a very perfectionist writer and your handwriting doesn't change much, you'll be able to more accurately guess that. But what you do is take that gauge, float it over your handwriting, and then just see which one it is. And you know, if you need help measuring, you know, you just need to re-listen to those videos and everything else. The thing that is most confusing about slant is the following chart. If you look at 3F, it says concentration, 4 cross outlay chart, dual personality. Move over to that chart, and I believe the number is 2V. So the chart is 2V. This is also in your certification course, really large in the handout. But a 4 cross outlay chart. Now, what this means is that no matter what slant somebody is, the size of the middle zone can affect their emotional expressiveness, their emotional outlay, their social aptitude. So an AB slant, which I sent the AB backwards there, if it's small writing, will that person be introverted or extroverted?
Introverted.
Now take that AB writer and move it down to the left-hand quadrant. If they're an AB writer but write really big, will they be introverted or extroverted?
More extroverted.
They'll actually be extroverted by definition. They'll be really, really friendly. One of my good friends, I haven't talked to her recently because she moved back to France and had a baby, but she was a FA writer and really, really large middle zone. Aggressive Y loops, and she was one of the most gregarious, friendly, outgoing, dare I say, obnoxious people you would ever want to have a glass of wine with.
Well, could you say that this person was, like, laughing on the outside, crying on the inside?
Well, here's the thing. She was, by definition, an extrovert. She did, and I found this out later, and she absolutely could not believe that I knew she was molested in her teenage years. Couldn't believe. How do you know that? Well, the only explanation for A.B. Ryder is that she feels emotionally traumatizes F.A. Ryder. There's got to be a trauma there. There's got to be a lack of trust, and that's probably the reason for her aggressive, obnoxious behavior was this aggressiveness. But instead of withdrawing into a shell, she came out fighting, right? So she still felt scarred. She still felt not trusted. Again, I'm really happy that she's, you know, she married and has a child, because I didn't think she'd ever get there, because she just didn't connect with people on an emotional level. She fought with them. But she was social. She talked. She was friendly. She loved politics. Of course, she's French. The French love politics, especially when you lean socialist. But she's an exception. So what that taught me was, in fact, I think those people thought, wow, there's some introverted qualities there. Couldn't be wrong. Couldn't be more wrong. So when you're dealing with slant, you have to consider the size of the middle zone as part of that context to make judgment calls on emotional outlay or social aptitude. Now, if you go one slant to the right, E-plus writer. Now, I rarely see a large writer that's also E-plus. Usually it just doesn't work because there's not a whole lot of control there. But you do see E-plus writers that are small. And I guess you could see large writing as E-plus if they've been drinking heavily, I guess. What is E-plus writer that's small? What kind of career might that be attractive? What kind of career would be E-plus writer but small writer?
A supervising accountant.
Supervising accountant. I don't disagree, but there might be a better answer, because an accountant with an E-plus writer won't quite be the thrill seeker that I'm seeing in my mind.
Okay.
Anyone? Bueller? No. Bueller? Anyone? Bueller?
Got it.
How about a fighter pilot?
Oh.
How about a race car driver?
Yeah.
Because
you better stay focused.
Yeah, it's.
I was thinking of stuntman.
Yeah, it's intense focus, but even golfers, race car drivers, they're not gregarious people. You know, Jeff Gordon's never going to win an Academy Award as an actor, but he can stand there with his can of oil and look cute, and you know, get $10 million because he can race a car. So they may be adrenaline junkies. They may be emotional. They may beat their wife. I don't know. But they're not extroverted. But by all means, they got to be focused. And usually that kind of passion would be competitive, would be passionate. You know, I've met fighter pilots in the Navy. And they're just, you can tell, man, they've got a wild streak. But it's very controlled. And if you're a perfectionist on top of that, then you might have the skill set to actually fly a billion-dollar jet at Mach 2. Or a million-dollar race car. Obviously, that takes an amazing amount of self-control. Good. If you move on and through the handout here, you've got examples of CD slant, examples of AB. If you look at the AB writer, that's an example of a big writing with AB. Take your emotional gauge and lay that down. Oh, here's something interesting. If you look at number 2G, this handwriting sample, does anybody know what country that's from? What is the original country of origin that person learned in? This is the 2G, ambivert. Ambivert. Any idea?
Yep.
That is from India.
India.
Surprisingly, there is a style of characters or style of font that looks like that. CD slant, perfect, very pretty, but there's a certain element that I can spot now only because I've been there so many times. Like, wow, that we're probably trained in India. The same traits apply. The CD slants there, the perfectionist there, the methodical thinking, everything's the same, but there's a certain gestalt about the whole handwriting that I know, or at least I can guess they had the original training in India. So that's good to know, especially those of you interested in forensics. By the way, if you didn't know, we're starting another class at the end of, I guess, the end of March, maybe April. But in the class of forensics. So if you want to be a forensic doc examiner, this isn't the right school. We have two different companies. And visit internationalschool.us or forensic doc exam school. That's where we actually train people to be forensic doc examiners. But that kind of stuff's important because you have to know where someone's trained to know whether or not they're deviating from the norm and whether or not it would actually fit into a class characteristic. So I've learned quite a bit since I've been teaching at the school about handwriting and the uniqueness, because there's so much research done in the forensics that's not done in graphology because there's money there. So where there's money, there's research. So, you know, if you're getting paid $1,000, $2,000 a day in court, it behooves you to research. You know what you're talking about. Okay, skip to Measuring the Slant 2P. If you don't have your 101 book, this is a good place. If you have the 101 book, please look at that. Those of you that have access to the membership site, the 101 area has this chart, as well as the 101 book on tape, as well as the emotional gauge. Please go through the video on that, because it is very complicated, and it will take a lot longer than just eyeballing it. And then finally, here's what I want to tell you, a big announcement. Those of you that come to the next TELUS seminar class, which will be in February, if you flip to page 1C, you will see a picture of the Rich and Happy book. That's me in the fuchsia tomato bisque red shirt. The blue book called Change Your Hair and Change Your Life, and the brown book. Now, those look different, don't they, Jerry? Those are the new covers and completely redesigned workbooks for Change Your Hair and Change Your Life. Those of you that are on the phone call next time, which is 2 weeks from now, you will get an entire copy of a brand new, never-before-published adult workbook, and we'll be talking about Change Your Hair and Change Your Life. So if you haven't signed up for the $17 a month program, do that. The book's going to be $29 when it gets released. It doesn't have a CD. It's all MP3, but the entire design has been changed. It's been edited. It's completely redesigned, and the kids' workbook actually is in full color, which will be another month or two. But we've designed those because we have such a big volume of those books being sold in India, we will be able to actually redo those. But we want you to have it. It's part of the membership program. It's a gift, and it'll be for those of you that come to the call next month, which, of course, will be for the paid members. And I do want you to go through it, and it's a phenomenal book. I looked through it and like, wow, I can't wait to do this on my own, because not only do you change your writing, but the other side, the B side of everything, is a question about your goals, your life, your values. It's just an awesome journal. So that's going to be a gift for those of you on the phone next week, so feel free to join. If you have any questions about the program or the website, you see all these new videos, and I know it's a little confusing for those of you that usually learned on cassettes, call our office. If Marianne can't answer your question, I will personally go to the phone and explain it to you. The phone number, if you don't know, it's 1-800-398-2278. That's 398-BART, if you didn't know that, 1-800-398-2278. And that's the phone number for our office. Next week or 2 weeks from now, we'll be doing graphotherapy, which is probably the most valuable thing you can learn as a certified handwriting expert. If you can learn really the basis of graphotherapy and why it works, you can change everybody's life that you talk to, not just being funny at a party and not just, letting know who's sexually frustrated, but literally with a few words, and if you cast it the right way, you can transform your entire existence, and that's a very powerful trait. So next time we get on the phone call, we'll talk about what traits I recommend in the book. We use the book as our textbook. That'll be the PDF file. And like I said, I hope that I'll see you here. It's straight up the hour now. Any other final questions? Thank you so much. The website for the special offer is handwritingconference.com. And good. Any other comments on what I just went over?
Yeah, Bart, I have something. I have found that getting into your first book and looking at the angles and everything, that the line between a CD and a DE is exactly 45 degrees.
That's a good observation. And it's 90 degrees is like straight up, correct?
Straight up and down is 90 degrees, but the CD DE is 45 degrees. And I found, for me anyway, and when I teach people, I teach them this way too, that way I can train my eye to quickly see, is it DEE plus or is it one of the ones to the left?
Oh, nice. So you just kind of eyeball it, whether it's 45 degrees right, or 90, and then you can see what area it comes.
Yeah, because when I draw my angle, I don't have to put the gauge to it to see if it's 45 degrees or not. I can eyeball that real easy.
Well, Jerry's been doing this 10 years. I must say, I still get my emotional gauge out on occasion and measure, because there are handwriting samples that will trick you.
But it impresses people.
Yeah, because and the gauge looks professional, like you're really, you're working hard.
Well, it's a tool. It's not just astrology.
Right. It's an actual
tool. It's scientific.
Tool.
You've got a tool, a measurement thing.
I never thought of it that way. It's really interesting. Really interesting. I do know that I recommend people take the cards with them, because it takes the focus on you being the expert, and instead it makes a game for everybody. Because we're all playing a game with the cards as the experts. So even if you're wrong because you're beginning, it's the cards and it's the interpretation. And it really lowers the self-consciousness if you put the cards on a little key ring, carry them around, because then the cards are what. That's a great observation. It's a tool. Very good, Jerry. Thank you. All right. Well, I'm going to wrap up now.
Quick question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Quick question. The fear of trust, is that more likely to be a FA or AB slant?
No. It pretty much goes across the gambit for sure. Mm-hmm. The FA slant, they've already got their issues with trust, and you know that they're there. And the whys will be kind of a calibration of how far that rabbit hole goes. But if they're an FA rider, you can bet they've got trust issues because they were traumatized. We don't know if it was sexual. That may or not be true, but they perceived it to be quite traumatic. And it was usually when they're young. Obviously, people get traumatized when they're older, but majority of people is between the age of 0 and 7, if not 0 to 17 for sure. Good. And those of you that are interested in the offer I did, the handwriting conference, the reason we have 17 is I checked with my shipping house. We have 17 manufactured and ready to go. It'll take another 4 weeks or so to ship that out to you. So if you do are not the 17th person, we'll definitely ship it to you as soon as we can. But we can also give you that instant access online. So if you're interested, go to handwritingconference.com, hit one of the order buttons, finance if you have to. But I can't wait to see you in Vegas. And check your emails for the next conference, which will be on a different phone line, but the same time in 2 weeks in February. Thank you, everybody. I've enjoyed myself, and thanks for sticking with me 2 hours, and I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Great talk to you.
Good fun.